Hi, friends, and welcome to the Plus Mommy Podcast. I'm your host, Jen McClellan, and here we explore plus-size pregnancy, motherhood, and body love. From bumps to bellies, we talk about it all. Now, let's get started. Hey, friends, today on the podcast, I'm going to be talking about food allergies, but more important, how it plays into self-advocacy around food and what you need. I think it's a delicate issue, right? As people of size, I don't want to make an assumption that everyone has, but many of us have struggled with food for most of our lives. We've related food to dieting. And if you're a dieter and have dieted most of your life, then you know that for most of us, diets don't work. We have studies to show that just straight dieting doesn't work long term. Most of us, it's like 96% of people will regain all the weight they will have lost from dieting plus. And that's the story of my life, that yo-yo dieting that always leads you to being heavier than you were even before, even if there's like a significant drop and then it just goes right back up, right? And this isn't to shame anyone who's currently dieting or on the keto train. You do you, it's your body. But for me, I've broken up with dieting and diet culture. Yet, you know, as a super plus size person, I want to feel good and strong in my body and nourishing my body with foods that make me feel great. And so for most of my life, and my mother will back this up, I've had digestive issues. I've spent a lot of time in the bathroom. There have been many family trips where we'd had to immediately find me a bathroom so I wouldn't have an accident in the car. And I just kind of thought that that was my life and that that's how I needed to exist. And it wasn't until I really started to tune into my body more after becoming a mother. So I'm talking in my 30s that I started to pay attention to how my body was feeling, how I was taking care of my body, and not in relation to weight. And that's a big, big shift, right? Is taking care of my body in a way that's not related just to how do I take care of my body to lose weight? No, how do I take care of my body to feel good in it today, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, every day, right? So I hired a nutritionist and I was really nervous that she was going to take one look at my fat ass and say, so we're eliminating all of these things. And she didn't, which thank goodness, but you can definitely do even more prep work than I did. I kind of just went with the person my doctor recommended, but I, you know, wish I would have called ahead and asked some questions or sent an email like, are you size friendly? Do you believe in health at every size? How do you work with patients of size? Do you, you know, recommend dieting? You know, whatever, ask those questions that are important to you to find the right person to support you and your needs. So she spent a lot of time just asking me questions about not only my foods and my triggers and what was going on digestively and what did I notice when I ate would cause these things. And I told her I was pretty sure I had a gluten sensitivity, but that I had had the initial celiac test, even though my mom has celiac, and for me it was negative. And like she said, and like you'll hear, you know, later on, there's a high rate of false negatives, and it's really just an indicator if you should have more testing done. So it's not the end all be all. So I had a conversation with this nutritionist about all the things, and then I noticed she was really asking me questions also about my sleep habits, how much water I was drinking, all of these other things that play just as important role in our health than the food we eat and how physically active we are. So she concurred with my initial, you know, my own self-diagnosis that yes, I have a gluten allergy and we should make sure by eliminating it and seeing how I feel. And when I went to see her, I really felt like emotionally I was at a breaking point. And this was at the very end of January of this year, 2019. Emotionally, I was just really sliding into more and more depression. And I haven't really talked about that openly much. I've probably mentioned it here or there, but I was really, really suffering. emotionally and even having some, you know, thoughts that just didn't feel right, but just making myself feel horrible about myself 24/7 because I wasn't feeling good in my body and I wasn't feeling happy and I was really struggling. And it played in multiple ways and multiple other things happening in my life that were contributing to that. But I just felt like I was sliding down a deep, deep hole. So I wanted to make some changes. And part of that was to look at what is causing me physically to be sick all the time, like go on a date with my husband and have to run to the bathroom and do a number two on a date. Not so fun, but my stomach would be cramping so much. I would, you know, didn't have a choice. So what was great was she just talked about, okay, this is what I want you to do. I just want you to eat whole healthy foods, eliminate gluten, and see how it makes you feel. But the goals that she set for me weren't even related upon eating gluten-free. The goals that she set was for me to drink way too much water that I haven't been good about every day. That was goal number one. Goal number two was to eat at the table as a family more often, because that was a struggle that I was having. Just our schedules are so wonky and I work so much. So to tune in more to the family and the table, which is so important. And I know that. And then the third goal was to go to bed and have a bedtime. So you're hearing these three goals. They aren't even necessarily food related. I will say that the eating at the table was also connected to meal planning. But it wasn't like only eat 1300 calories a day. You know, it was nothing like that. It was really focusing in on behavioral changes. And that can be the benefit of a nutritionist, is beyond just looking at foods, looking at the whole scope of your health and how you take care of yourself and how that relates to our health in so many ways. So I started doing all the things, and I haven't been perfect in any way, shape, or form, but I have been very strict about going gluten-free, and it has changed my life. So I might not go to bed when I'm supposed to go to bed. I never go to bed when I'm supposed to go to bed. I work way too late, but I'm feeling so much better, like ridiculously better, like not as many dark, depressive thoughts. My mood has lifted. Like for a while there, I like was canceling plans with friends often. And I live in a new state. I don't have that many friends. So I'm sure I was coming across as like a flaky person, but I was just really struggling with feeling down about myself and feeling blue. And you don't want to go out in public when you feel that way. But I realized I wasn't feeling that way anymore. I was reaching out to people and making plans. And so for me, going gluten-free because of a true allergy to gluten, not because of a diet, has radically changed my life. But here's where it got interesting. See how I said in the beginning that I had broken up with diet culture and didn't like restrictive eating? All of a sudden, I had to practice restrictive eating. And that was really, really, really difficult in the beginning. Like, and it still is. It still is when I go to a restaurant and I can't just order whatever sounds good to me and whatever my body is saying, wow, this sounds really good. Like, I can't do that. I have to, as you'll hear when we talk with Brianna in a few minutes, I have to ask questions and I have to dig in deep, because otherwise I'm going to have stomach cramps and I'm going to have to run to the bathroom, and it might play back into how I was feeling badly about myself and my emotions and depression. And I know people may be like, oh my God, what is she talking about? It's just food. No, like the food that we eat, it does so much to our bodies and our physical and mental health. So just bear with me, because there's studies to now show a connection with people who are gluten intolerant or have celiac disease and depression. So back to it. I really struggled though as a fat person, having to be like, oh, I can't eat the cake when everyone's eating the cake. But it's not because I don't want the cake. I really, really want a piece of cake. But if I eat the cake, it's going to make me sick. So planning ahead. And I think since I live in a new state and don't have that many friends, there's not that many birthday parties. But, you know, there's been some kids parties with my son, and just having the strength to say no thank you to the cake. And if they want to judge and think, oh, she's on a diet, well, then that's their judgment. But for me, I'm having to do it for myself. But it's been a real struggle internally of having to really limit foods that used to be kind of go-to foods for me. Carbs are delicious. And so I posted in a Health at Every Size Facebook group about, hey, I'm having to make these lifestyle changes because it physically made me sick. And also, there's a good chance that I do have celiac, which can create great health problems, hospitalization. Like, it just can do so much damage to your body. And so I have to take this seriously since my mom has celiac. And I obviously have a gut reaction to gluten. So I posted in there saying, like, hey, this is a struggle. Like, I've worked so hard to be more confident and have a different relationship with food, and now I'm going back into this restrictive behavior, which can lead to eating disorders, as we've had these conversations here on the podcast before. And it was just really helpful to hear from other people who are in the same boat with the same struggles, and kind of how they have come to a place of just acceptance and self-advocacy. And that is the core of the conversation that I want to come through in this episode today, is that we have to advocate for what we need for ourselves, for our children, for that nuclear family. It's so important. And yes, people are gonna have their judgments, their opinions, but you know what? They don't have control over my body. They don't know what it feels like to be on a date when you hardly ever get a date with my husband, and then be in physical pain, or just be like, I've got a date night. The kids at the grandparents, you know, I want to have some sexy time, and I'm sitting on the toilet. So that's my life. And I, like, sorry to get so detailed, but we're totally talking about poop on this episode. Like, I don't want to feel that way. So if someone's going to judge me because I don't order a certain way, or I say no to the cake, then that's their problem. I don't want to be sick on the toilet. I want all the sexy time. So I just want you to know, I know not everyone has food allergies or food concerns or the issues with food that I've had my whole life, but everyone can do a better job at self-advocacy, and it is critically important, especially for those of us who have been told all of our lives that we can't take up space. We shouldn't be eating the cake anyways. We have to change our bodies. We have to mold ourselves to fit in with a society that glorifies Photoshopped, surgically changed bodies, like the bodies that just are so unobtainable. I just want you to know that your body is pretty amazing the way it is today. Even if everyone is telling you that there's something wrong with it, like, your body is incredible, and we all have our own struggles. But if you can realize, like, hey, my body today, I'm breathing, I'm moving, I can carry my children and snuggle them and love them. Like, if you want to take steps to feel better in your body, then look at nutrition. Look at moving in ways that make you feel better about your body. Will weight loss be a byproduct of those changes? Maybe. Is it the focus of those changes? No. And having that psychological shift is so, so, so incredibly powerful and necessary. I started on this journey at the end of January, and right now it's May, and I can't even begin to describe not only depression lifting and not having to run to the bathroom and not having horrible stomach cramps, but also swelling that I've had for years has dramatically decreased. My mobility is so much better because I've shed a lot of this swelling that I've been holding on to for so long. Yes, my body has changed in other ways too, but that has not been the focus of it. The focus of it has been, how can I feel better in my body? So I want you to hold on to that. I want you, if you struggle with digestive issues, even if you don't, connecting with a nutritionist and finding foods that are great for your body. And I did a full blood panel as part of this, of like, what's going on with my body? And it's so, so important that we pay more attention to our bodies and love on our bodies and take care of our bodies. And so our kids are seeing us, you know, we're modeling that behavior. So they're loving on their bodies too. Alrighty, so let's bring on Brianna now. Hello, friends. We are joined by a dear friend of mine, Brianna Hobbs of the blog Flippin' Delicious. I wanted Brianna to come on and talk with us a little bit about her journey and signs and symptoms around either being celiac or having a gluten intolerance, and more importantly, how we can be really good about advocating for ourselves. So hi, Brianna.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me on.
Why don't you tell the listeners a little about yourself?
So my name is Brianna Hobbs, and I've been blogging at flippindelicious.com for almost 7 years. And I started because I really believe that gluten-free can be that good and that no one should have to live a deprived life just because they have to eat gluten-free.
You make the best cookies. So thank you. You've shared them with me before and they are delicious.
Thank you. No, I feel really strongly that people shouldn't have to feel like they're missing out on anything just because they have to eat gluten-free.
So I felt so fortunate to have a friend like Brianna when I was newly gluten-free to help navigate it. So why don't you talk a little about the signs and symptoms if you might have a gluten allergy or celiac disease?
So the tricky thing with diagnosing celiac disease, and actually can take like 10 years or even longer to get diagnosed with celiac disease, because it presents in a lot of different ways. So my grandma was diagnosed with celiac disease in her 60s.
Yeah, my mom too.
Yeah. I mean, my grandma has been having all sorts of problems her entire life, had been diagnosed with Crohn's and a lot of other things. And turns out, I think she does have Crohn's in addition to celiac disease, but obviously she had celiac disease this entire time and just didn't know. It takes so long to get diagnosed, and because it's really difficult. So the like brief overview of how you figure out if you have celiac disease or not is, first there's a blood test you can do, but that really is a screener, and there are lots of false negatives.
Yeah, my blood test was negative, but if I eat gluten, my stomach cramps and I have to run to the bathroom really fast. So that's why my nutritionist and I decided, hey, you have a gluten allergy, might even have celiac, let's just eliminate gluten.
Yeah, so, yeah. You definitely have a gluten intolerance of some sort.
Yeah, that's not normal if you have cramping or like, I'm going to poop my pants.
Yeah, it's definitely not normal at all. And I think for me, and for a lot of people who have celiac disease or are gluten intolerant, you've just always lived that way. And so you don't know that it's not normal.
Yeah. And I feel like as a plus size person, I'm so out of touch, or I have been so out of touch for so much of my life, of tuning into my body and what is happening to my body. So having cramps and having to run to the bathroom just became my normal for so long, which is sad. Mm-hmm. Now that it isn't my normal, I realize how long I was torturing myself. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just, it's not a good way to live.
No.
So getting diagnosed with celiac disease can be really tricky. There's that blood test first.
Yeah.
And then the only way to get a positive celiac diagnosis is with an upper endoscopy.
No, endoscopy. That's
okay. I always feel like I'm going to say it wrong. But that's the only way to really get a diagnosis. But even my grandma, they did the upper endoscopy and that came back negative. But one of the presentations that celiac disease can have is actually like a rash. It's called, I forget the name. I'm not going to try and pronounce it off the top of my head. But there's a rash you can get. And so they did a biopsy of her rash, and that came back positive for celiac disease. So it's really, really difficult to get diagnosed. And she had to really advocate for herself. She had been having this problem for years and years and really had to advocate for herself with her doctor and ask to be tested. And so, you know, I think that is something that, you know, I know you have to do a lot for yourself.
Yeah. Well, even I had a doctor that was just like, well, just stop eating it. So yeah, advocating for yourself can be really hard. And even if you know what you need, I don't understand why doctors won't do the thing that you need. I even had a doctor that was like, oh, well, you need a colonoscopy. And I'm like, no, I need an endoscopy. Like,
other end.
Yeah. And there's so much misinformation around celiac that even care providers aren't well educated. So as we've talked about on the show before, advocating for yourself and doing that initial blood test, right?
Do the initial blood test, but you really have to advocate for yourself and see it through. Yeah, they're really, that's the only way to really get a diagnosis, unless you like just win Dr. Roulette.
Yeah.
That's the only way to really get it.
Why does it have to be
diagnosis?
A game that we have to play? I'm just popping in to say that I've been where you might be today. Plus size, pregnant, and discouraged by all the negative information online about what it is like to have a plus size pregnancy. Over the past 7 years, as a certified childbirth educator, I've supported thousands of plus size people during pregnancy, and I've poured all the information I've gained into a guide that will support you. Get the My Plus Size Pregnancy Guide today at plussizebirth.com. Be sure to enter coupon code PLUSMOMMY to get 20% off your guide. You can also get the audiobook version that I recorded just for you. Stop Googling and start feeling empowered today. Now, let's get back to the show. But you were telling me something fascinating around our genes and getting our DNA.
Yeah, so there's a very strong genetic component to celiac disease. And so if you do like the 23andMe gene test that tells you about your, you know, your medical history, and I know there's a couple other tests like that, they can tell you if there's two different genes, and most people who have celiac disease, about 95% of people who have celiac disease, carry one of these genes.
Wow.
However, not everyone who carries that gene has celiac disease.
Got it.
But the genes are, there's DQ2.5 and DQ8 are those two genes. And so there are... If you have that gene, it's really important that you keep an eye out for symptoms of celiac disease and that you do get screened regularly with that blood test every couple of years, because there's, especially everyone who has a relative with celiac disease, it's important for you to get screened every few years, because you could carry that gene and just not have your celiac disease triggered. It. Celiac is an autoimmune disease, and so it can be triggered by a traumatic event, by pregnancy, by other health problems. And so just because maybe you carry the gene, you don't have celiac disease now, that's great, but you might have celiac disease in a couple years. So you kind of just have to be vigilant and keep an eye out for it.
Well, and I was just thinking, you know, we did the test for Brayden, the DNA test. It was a surprise Father's Day gift for my husband, because he's adopted. And I thought it would be beautiful to give him his heritage, because at the time he hadn't connected with his adopted family. So I have Brayden. So even if you do it for your kids, you can look for those certain markers and see. That's fascinating.
Yeah. And of course, you know, you can't get diagnosed with the gene test, but it can be a wonderful tool, especially for someone like me. I never got officially diagnosed with celiac disease because my grandma got diagnosed, and then I was still living at home, and my family was like, well, hey, like, this sounds familiar, like these problems sound familiar, like some of the stuff that some of the people in our family are dealing
with. Talk about the symptoms and the problems.
So there's a lot of different problems and symptoms. Like, my grandma had a rash, which is super difficult it was really tricky for her to get diagnosed. But a lot of them are just the, like, general digestion problems.
Oh, yeah.
Running to the bathroom. You can get really, most celiacs I know talk very openly about all their poop.
Well, and so do mothers, right?
And so
right,
do mothers. We do that. But it's just compounded when you've got a group of celiac blogging mothers. All the lots and lots of poop, lots of poop jokes, lots of these. But it's something, you know, and if you don't know that that's not normal, like if you've just been living like that your whole life, you don't know that it's not normal.
Yeah.
And once you eat gluten-free for a while, and then if you have celiac disease, sometimes it doesn't feel like you get the symptoms all the time. I know that was kind of the case for you, Jen.
Yeah.
Sometimes you felt like you got a reaction when you ate something with gluten. But a lot of the time you didn't.
Yeah. But now not eating it for mm-hmm. a few months, it's been life-changing. And I also feel like depression has lifted.
Oh,
and I was reading some studies around that. So it's serious to take into consideration. And then there was my mom who had no symptoms whatsoever until she was getting blood work and seeing that her iron levels were dangerously low. So back to your story, though. So you had a family history. You were having digestive problems like me forever. And then to be tested for celiac disease, you have to be eating gluten.
You have to be eating gluten. And I had already stopped. Yeah. So you have to be eating equivalent to like a slice of bread a day. And if I were to do that, I would die. I have such a violent reaction. I mean, like sometimes when I get gluten, it's like, you know, 4 hours of like back labor contraction level pain.
Bad. No fun.
Not worth it. Just to, you know, to get some positive test. And you know, there's lots of differing opinions and I still am a huge advocate for getting tested. It really can be, make such a big difference because if you do have celiac disease, you're at a higher risk for a lot of other autoimmune diseases, for cancer, or for certain kinds of cancer. And so it really is important knowledge to have. But I've talked with my doctor and they've said, I've talked to a couple different doctors and they've said, you know, Brianna, what would you gain by having that positive diagnosis? Consider yourself diagnosed.
Yeah.
And of course, I didn't make that decision on my own. I talked with my doctor, but I advocated for myself in talking with them and just, you know, explained, you know, with all of my family history, because I am probably fourth generation celiac. My grandma was diagnosed. My mom is in the same boat as me. Didn't get officially diagnosed, but
You know, when you feel better. I think, like, you don't always know when you feel sick, but you know when you feel better.
Exactly.
The way you advocate for yourself when you and I go on lunch dates is something that I'm still finding the courage to do. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, especially as a plus size person eating in public, like you already sometimes feel a little bit of judgment. So you're just kind of like I've gotten to the point where I'm like, I don't always feel like I have to eat the salad if I don't want the salad. But if I want the salad, I now have to make sure that it doesn't have croutons on it and ask about the dressings. But you do it in a way where you're like, I have celiac disease. I need to make sure this is happening. I need gloves wiped out. And I'm so in awe of that. Thanks. And I want that to carry through to my life in multiple aspects. So talk a little bit about how you advocate for yourself, even just going out to eat.
Yeah. So when we just got lunch.
Yes, we
just
did.
Got lunch together.
It was delicious.
And we got some extra practice on advocating for ourselves. And, you know, the place we went, they had a great gluten-free menu, full page. Not every place has that, but even when a place has a gluten-free menu, you still have to ask questions and advocate for yourself. For us, we were at a New Mexican restaurant because we live in New Mexico. And one thing New Mexico is amazing and amazingly well known for, or at least it should be, is sopapillas. They are delicious, but it's basically like a fried puffy pillow of gluten. And
R.I.P.
so good.
Sopapillas, I miss you so much.
I know. The sopapillas are often put in a fryer and then the chips are house fried. And so they both go in the same fryer.
Same fryer. And that's cross-contamination with gluten.
And that's cross-contamination with gluten. And so, because that flour is everywhere. And so, you know, we had to ask a lot of questions about, you know, do your chips go in a different fryer? And then they came out and brought us different chips. They're like, we double check the fryer on this one. These for sure came from a safe fryer that we just so you are for sure safe with these ones. But asking questions about, like, is your red chili thickened with flour? Is the red chili that on your carne adobada thickened with flour? Or is it not the red chili you serve? Lots of questions like that. The oddest thing, I've never heard this before and I still don't really entirely buy it, but she said that they're sour cream was loaded with gluten.
I was like, what do you put in your sour cream?
Sour cream is just cream.
Yeah, like, so gluten is in more things than you would ever realize, and you'll know that if you have an allergy. So it's not just wheat, but it's also can be used as a preservative. So, like some dressings or sauces. Absolutely.
Used as a thickener a lot.
Yeah.
Modified
but
food starch.
But you just need to ask. And I find, like, the more questions you ask, the more they pay attention. And then it's like the restaurant manager is bringing you your meal and reassuring you that it's safe. And
Which is a great feeling.
Yeah.
Places like the place that we just ate, where the manager came out and they're like, here, these are the precautions I've taken mm-hmm. to make sure your food is safe. Someone from the kitchen delivered our food and they yes. said, I made this for you. I worked hard to make sure that it was safe. These are the things I did. That makes me feel confident in
and
eating.
Special.
And special. Yeah. But yeah. But especially, you know, as it'd be really difficult to advocate. You feel weird already eating out sometimes. Mm-hmm. And you know, and like we got nachos. That's
yeah.
definitely
yeah, no salad there.
You know, maybe that already makes you feel a little self-conscious. And then you have to really be kind of like a problem table asking tons of questions, but it's important because it is, you are worth it. Your safety is worth it. It is not worth your health for you to risk it and not ask yeah. those questions.
You often research places before we even go, so you know the
Absolutely.
Safe places to go. But then once you arrive, you ask for their gluten-free menu if they have one. And then you always say from the beginning when you are ordering, mm-hmm. I have celiac. I need to make sure that safety precautions. And when you are having something, whether it's fries or tortilla chips, you always ask if they have a dedicated fryer. That's
yeah.
the one thing that I love that you ask. How did you get to the point where you had so much confidence with it? Because I'm still at the point where I'm like, I order things that I know should be safe. And I just mentioned, like, if it is that salad, please don't put croutons on it. But how do you get to the point where you're just like, I have celiac, this is what I need?
I think I used to be a lot more hesitant about it. And I think really the game changer for me was I got sick when I ate out. And it's just not worth it. If I go someplace and there isn't something that I feel safe eating, I'll just have like a cup of tea and call it good. Or, you know, I will order the salad if that's the only thing I feel like I can eat. But if I'm at a place and I don't feel like I can, like I'll just eat, you know, just have a cup of tea or a latte or coffee or whatever.
I don't want to be the fat girl at the table having tea.
I don't either. I don't either, which is why when I can, I say, hey, here are some restaurants I know I can eat safely at.
Yeah.
Because exactly. I don't.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
I don't want to be that person either. But you know, no matter who, it doesn't matter if a restaurant has a really good gluten-free menu. It doesn't matter if they have a good reputation. It is the people. And so it's all about connecting mm-hmm. with the people who are helping you and who are preparing your food.
Yeah.
Because that's a different person than the person who prepared, you know, Jane's salad on Thursday.
Mm-hmm. And you're always so sweet and you're always smiling and we always say thank you. So, but mm-hmm. but I wanted to talk about this and bring this to the show.
Yeah.
Knowing that, you know, most people don't have celiac or a gluten intolerance, but it's more about how do we advocate for ourselves when there's something that's different going on for our bodies, and that
yeah.
it's so important, and that food for many of us who exist in larger bodies has been triggering
absolutely
for most of our lives. So when you have to cross over advocating for yourself and then advocating yourself for food,
mm-hmm.
it's really hard.
It really is.
So if you hear from someone like Brianna who's doing it and me now who's getting better at it, hopefully it'll encourage you mm-hmm. if there's something that you have an allergy to or just something that you'd prefer, like you're paying
yep,
for this food, and if you like it done a certain way, you know, then just be nice, but ask
yeah.
for it. It's so important, and a lot of restaurants take this seriously because
mm-hmm.
you and I legit could poop our pants at their restaurant.
I they really don't want that. That reflects very well. I think that it really, it takes some courage to
yeah.
start. But for me now, it's just second nature, but it has taken me a long time. It's taken me a lot of practice. And because I really, like, I've got to, you know, stand up straight and just say, hey, I have celiac disease. This is really important. This
yeah.
is a medical need of mine. Can you with these things? And so no matter if I've eaten at a restaurant a dozen times or if I've heard a great recommend, always do that. And it's hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard, especially like, you know, whenever someone else picks the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you have that problem, you know, going to restaurants you've never been to before. I was listening to a podcast episode that you did recently. You were talking about that.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you try to pick restaurants where, you know, they've got some size-friendly seating.
Yeah.
And it's the same for me. I try to pick when I can. I try to pick a restaurant where I know they've got at least some options that I can. So I have a starting point. But sometimes you can't do that. And you just have to, you know, work with wherever you are. And it takes courage. And it's not always easy. But you are worth it. And it is worth it because your health.
Your health is worth it. Yeah. And I think telling your friends when they're picking places, like, if your friends aren't being cognizant of, I mean, sure, they forget.
Yeah.
I mean, not always in the forefront of their mind, your food allergies, but surrounding yourself with people who are going to be thoughtful enough to be like, hey, can you eat at this restaurant? Or more importantly, if they've picked somewhere that just doesn't work for you, being able to say, hey, I don't want to just be having a cup of tea. Can we try this instead? So
absolutely.
All of that great self-advocacy is so important. So Thank you. Thank you so much for coming
and
sharing these gems with us and teaching us a bit about celiac and pooping your pants. So I don't want to transition from poop to where can people find you, but it's almost appropriate. So Brianna, where can people find you?
So my website is flippindelicious.com, and I focus on sharing gluten-free recipes and lifestyle tips for people who have to live a gluten-free life or who have celiac disease. You can also find me on Instagram and Twitter at flippindelish, and then on Facebook, I'm Flippin' Delicious also.
Wonderful. I'll put everything in the show notes. And you guys, even if you're not gluten intolerant, these recipes are delicious, which is why it's in the name of her blog. So
yep.
Check her out. All right. Bye,
friends. Thanks so much, Jen.
Bye.